Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. I'm going to talk about basically how we can launch an Islamic revival today. And so we begin with the observation that Islam is all about knowledge. Adam alayhi salam was created and then he was taught the names. And this is a very significant thing, what names mean, which we will not discuss in this lecture. And after he was given this knowledge, then the angels made sajda to him. Allah Ta'ala himself, Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is sitting in the cave of Hira looking for guidance. And Allah Ta'ala, who has oceans of descriptives which would never finish, he has to choose some description. And he describes himself as the teacher of mankind. And Allah Ta'ala says that he taught by the pen, taught humanity what they knew not. And in another ayat, he asks our Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam to make the dua, Rabbi Zidni Ilma. And in the Quran, it is written that are those who know equal to those who know not? And the hadith is whoever follows a path in the pursuit of knowledge, Allah Ta'ala will make the path to Jannah easy for him. But these are just a small sample. If someone were to collect a hadith and Quran about knowledge, you could easily write a book. And I know that there are books on this topic, on the value and the virtue of knowledge and those who know. So everybody in the audience would know these. So this is just a reminder and not meant as a lecture on this topic at all, but this is just to focus ourselves that Islam is really about knowledge. Now, the knowledge in the Quran is of a special sort. It is not knowledge that you and I could ever have by any conceivable means. We cannot do experiments, we cannot reason, we cannot do anything to reach that knowledge, because this is the gift of God to mankind. And Allah Ta'ala describes it in the Quran that this Quran, that this message that you have been given, which is the bounty of Allah and His mercy, in this you should be happy because it is better than anything that anyone else can gather. Very specifically and directly, the knowledge that we have been given in the form of the Quran and the Sunnah is superior to all of the knowledge that all of the rest of humanity can gather. This is very important. This is the fundamental and basis of the diagnosis that I will discuss, and accordingly the solution to the problem the Ummah is facing now I will discuss. Allah Ta'ala says that today I have perfected the religion and I have completed my blessings and I have approved Islam as your religion. And it means that our deen is complete and perfect guidance given to us, this is true until the day of judgment. It is complete, it is perfect, it doesn't need additions and it doesn't have any errors in it. So before we turn to what this knowledge is and how we can implement it, let's look at what this knowledge did to the lives of the people who received it first. And we can note, this is a historical fact accepted by all, enemies and friends, that ignorant and backwards Bedouin became world leaders. And the teaching of Islam created a magnificent civilization which aspired to the highest ideals available to mankind and enlightened all of humanity for 1,000 years. The advanced civilization of Al-Andalus, which lasted for 7 centuries, that's more than twice the length of the Western civilization, so-called, it achieved certain characteristics which have not been achieved in the world today. In particular, it showed a model of how Christians and Jews and Muslims could live together in peace and harmony. And basically, this was the Dark Ages of Europe, and they ended when the reconquest of Spain gave Europeans possessions of millions of books in the libraries of Al-Andalus. Why were there millions of books? Because Muslims have always been seekers of knowledge. Because from the day one, Allah Ta'ala teaches them to look around you and learn from the world around you. So the Europeans started translating these books, and this is what created the Enlightenment in Europe, something which is concealed in their histories of the world. They talk of Enlightenment as a spontaneous event unique to Europe. They do not reveal that this, and this is part of deliberate policy. But this fits into our Quranic, our Islamic worldview, that all knowledge available to mankind today is inspired by the Quran. The Quran was the source of light in a dark world. But don't want to dwell too much on ancient history, because this story conflicts with what our eyes show us today. Today we see that all power and glory belongs to the Western civilization. Muslims are backwards and ignorant, just like the days of Jahiliyyah today. The shining names among Muslims today are those who are students of the West, mostly, not students of the Quran. And we, the Ummah as a whole, are overwhelmingly training our own children in the Western sciences, and the Quran and the Hadith seem irrelevant for the modern world. So, char or not char, without it, we are forced to arrive at the conclusion that all valuable knowledge today is the creation of the West. So there are two dramatically conflicting claims. One is the claim of Islam that mankind was in darkness and in ignorance until the Son of Islam rose in Medina and enlightened the world. And the message of the Quran is complete and perfect and sufficient for our guidance until the Day of Judgment. On the other hand, there is the Western claim, which is in direct opposition and conflict. And they say that mankind was in darkness and ignorance until the Son of Reason rose in Europe and liberated them from superstitions and allowed them to make spectacular progress in all fields of knowledge. And further, they claim that today, anyone who wants to make progress must acquire European knowledge and ways of thinking, and there are no other paths to progress. So if we believe this claim of the West, then we must reject Islam. So today, I think this is the root diagnosis, that the greatest barrier to our reviving Islam today is a spiritual barrier. The spiritual barrier comes from the fact that we have been given the greatest gift of mankind. For us to look elsewhere for guidance is the height of ingratitude towards Allah Ta'ala. And today the vast majority of the Ummah is convinced that the keys to progress lie in Western knowledge, not in the Quran. And with this mindset, it is impossible for us to benefit from the complete and perfect guidance from Allah Ta'ala, because we don't even look to it for guidance. As Iqbal has said, "Hum to ma'il bi karam hai koi sa'il hi nahi." Allah Ta'ala is in the answer to the complaint. Allah Ta'ala, Iqbal says these words on behalf of Allah Ta'ala, that we are ready to guide you, but nobody is seeking guidance from us. So this is in a nutshell the problem we face. But this is the diagnosis, and the solution to the problem we face is deep and difficult. But the first problem is to look in the right place. Today we are looking in the wrong places for the solutions, and therefore we cannot find the key. So let me talk a little bit about my own personal journey. I was deeply steeped in the Western worldview, and I also believe that Western knowledge is massively dazzling and brilliant, and a great accomplishment for mankind. But after training in Tabligh, I learned that faith means trusting in Allah even though all empirical experience, the evidence of our eyes and our reason itself tells us that there is no route of escape, but Allah Ta'ala will part the seas to create a way where it is impossible to conceive of escape route. And Allah Ta'ala said, so this led me to a personal dilemma, because we read the ayah that Allah waliyu allatheena amanu yukhrijuhum min adh-dhulumati ila an-nur والذين كفروا أولياؤهم الطاغوت يخرجونهم من النور إلى الظلمات أولئك أصحاب النار هم فيها خالدون. And to me this ayah says very clearly that knowledge will be given to those who believe, and those who reject Allah Ta'ala will be in the darkness. But this is what the Quran is saying, but what my eyes are telling me is that Muslims are ignorant and backwards. So those who believe are in the darkness, and those who disbelieve and who laugh at Allah and who laugh at the whole religion, they have the knowledge. So this is a stark contradiction between what the Quran is saying and what my eyes are showing me. And so, alhamdulillah, with the effect of tabligh, I was able to say that yes, what my eyes are showing me is wrong, and what the Quran tells me is correct, but I don't understand it. I don't understand how, I don't understand why. And so I made very intense dua to Allah that, oh Allah Ta'ala, please resolve this problem for me. I don't understand at all how it can be that those who believe are in darkness and ignorance, and those who don't believe have the light of knowledge. So it didn't happen in one day, it took more than a decade, and slowly in bits and pieces the puzzle began to fall together, and Allah Ta'ala showed me that what the kuffar called knowledge is actually foolishness, and this is the key. So how do we resolve this contradiction? We must accept the evidence of our heart and reject the evidence of our eyes and reason. But this is also not a feasible standpoint for a long time. You can't go around in the world and walk blindly and not use your reason. It's only temporarily that you have to trust in Allah. فَمَنْ يَتَوَكَّلَ اللَّهُ فَوَحَسْبَهُ. So when you put your trust in Allah Ta'ala, then Allah Ta'ala will suffice for your needs. And He has created our ears and eyes, our hearts, and all our instruments of perception. So we have to get these instruments aligned on the same view. And so when they are showing us different pictures, then something is wrong and that has to be fixed. So what I would like to say is that the primary battleground is that of knowledge, not of the sword and not of the atom bombs and not of economics and not of the many other things which have been put forth as the potential solution to our current problem. The biggest problem is knowledge. And the question that we started out and I'm continue to discuss is Western knowledge more valuable than that of the Quran? Are the actions that we are taking are aligned with a yes answer, even though our heart says no? So we have to align our thoughts and actions with our feelings and faith. How can we do this? I'm going to now put this question aside for a while and shift to some other secondary questions, because they will help us in solving this primary question. So how did this happen? When did this happen? And what about other diagnoses? I'm putting forth one diagnosis, but there are many major groups of Muslim. In fact, every sincere Muslim will think about what the problem is and how we can solve it. So there are some alternative diagnoses which I'm sure everyone has heard because they are so very widely known and discussed, and I'm not going to actually explain them in detail, nor am I going to spend time arguing for or against them. I have considered many of them, and So one of them, which is widely accepted by everyone, is that it's our weakness in faith. We don't have enough faith in Allah. So we need to strengthen faith. And how do we do that? There's the tabligh, which I have been very strongly participant of. And their claim is that it is the abandonment of the collective responsibility for da'wah, which is the source of our problems today. So if we pick up the mantle of Islam and start collectively inviting humankind to Islam, Allah Ta'ala will solve our problems. Other groups say that bid'ah has spread throughout the land and we need to purify the Islam. And in fact, Muslims have become grave worshippers and shirk has spread. Others say that we need to enforce the Sharia. This is one of the requirements of Islam. Creation of Islamic state, getting the Khilafah back, abandonment of jihad. And there is a very interesting debate that there's a group of Muslims who say that taqleed is the problem. Muslims have become trapped in just following the ulama and not thinking for themselves. And there's another group which says that ijtihad is the problem. Muslims have started too much free thinking and have abandoned the... So both taqleed and both ijtihad are considered as sources of the problem. So anyway, I will not consider these in detail. And I will just pass on to my own diagnosis, which is that first we think about what happened when the Arabs, plain and simple desert Arabs, came into contact with very sophisticated and complex ancient philosophies known to them as Greek philosophies. So the Mu'tazila, who were highly impressed, said that reason is on par with wahi. Just like today, we think that Western knowledge is on par with wahi. So they were so influential that this became the state religion as and was enforced upon the Muslims. But Allah Ta'ala protected his deen and the Mu'tazilites were rejected by the bravery and strong confidence and faith of some leaders of the Ummah. And eventually, all of these things which the Mu'tazila wanted to include as part of our religion, on par with Wahi, the Greek philosophy, all of these things were rejected and they were proven wrong and defective. And Imam Ghazali wrote the Hafat al-Falasifa, which played an important role in the rejection of Greek philosophy. Today also, I am going to make the claim that all of the things that the West calls knowledge are eventually going to be rejected, even though this seems very incredible and implausible to us today. So it's just like the claim that what our eyes showing is us is an illusion. So today, the problem that we face is the modern Mu'tazila. Today, in the 20th century early, 90% of the globe was under Western control, including the Islamic lands. So one key understanding is that colonization is actually not physical conquest primarily, but primarily the conquest of minds. Colonized minds were indoctrinated with the superiority of Western knowledge and the superiority of Western civilization. And today, all over the Islamic world, we define progress to be accumulation of wealth, which is what the West has taught us, because that's the only thing they know. But an immediate objection arises that colonization ended 70 years ago. After World War II, most of the countries achieved independence and Islamic world was more or less free. But the problem is that the process by which the colonization of minds take place is Western education. And this is very much in full force today, much stronger than before. And how does the Western education indoctrinate us? It teaches us that all useful knowledge today is the product of Western civilization. Everything that is being taught in universities today comes from Western sources, and the global power and dominance of the West supports this assertion that all power and glory belongs to the West, And this comes from the extraordinary advances in knowledge that they have. And all of this knowledge is outside the Quran and the Sunnah. So as soon as we accept that the story of Western power and the story of the grand and wonderful structure of Western knowledge, then we are forced to say that the guidance of the Quran is not complete and it's not perfect. It's not complete because we need to add Western knowledge to it for our guidance today. And it's not perfect because there are many points at which Western knowledge is in conflict with the Quranic guidance. And so in those cases, we have to reject the Quran and accept the West. And this has been done by many Muslims today. So the Ghazali project, which is my own resolution and solution to the problem, is described in detail in this link, says that there are three steps to detoxifying our minds from Western indoctrination. The first, and these correspond to three books of Imam al-Ghazali. The first one is translated as deliverance from error, but it's better translated as deliverance from doubt. How can we acquire strong faith in our own religion? That Allah Ta'ala is true no matter what. No matter what the eyes saw, no matter what the world says, if the whole world is united against me, but Allah Ta'ala is with me, then I have no fear. But if the whole world supports me and agrees to me and wants to help me, but Allah Ta'ala is not with me, then I have no hope. So to arrive at this faith is a central requirement for detoxification of our minds. Only with this faith will be able to see through the camouflage of the West. Iqbal has said that khira na kar saka mujhe jalwa-e danish-e farang, that my eyes were not dazzled by the brilliance of Western wisdom because they were protected from the by the dust of Medina and Najaf, two centers of learning in early Islam. And so this is the problem today, that we that Iqbal may have been protected, but the rest of the Ummah, our eyes have been blinded by the brilliance of Western knowledge. And so, after we reject and get our eyes back, that doesn't end the job, that's actually the beginning of the task. Then we have to turn to our own sources of wisdom, and we have to revive the religious knowledge. We have to rebuild the entire stock of human knowledge on the foundations of the Quran and the Sunnah, and this is a massive task which is facing us today. Because we can't go back. This is the mistake that traditionalists make, that we can solve our modern problems by looking at the fatwa of Imam Abu Hanifa. This cannot be done because the fatwa of Imam Abu Hanifa were applicable to his time. He creatively solved his own problems, and his students use his methods to solve the problems which arose in their times. And today we have also the same problem, that we can't just take solutions from the past and apply them to today. We have to take the methods from the past and use these methods to find our own solutions today. So I'm going to describe briefly the three steps, and one is the first step is deliverance from doubt. How can we arrive at certainty? And the key insight of Ghazali, which is in direct conflict with what we have been trained to, in the ways that we have been trained to think in the West, is that certainty is a condition of the heart. It comes from experience, and it comes from our connection with Allah Ta'ala. The West, the whole stock of Western knowledge, rejects the heart as a source of knowledge. They only accept the mind as a source of knowledge. And this is a serious problem. So there is the central to Islamic knowledge is tazkiyah, purification of the heart. Because our hearts are built with the capacity to recognize the truth. But it can be trained away from the natural religion. And we have to recognize that our sickness comes from our having been trained away from the deen of nature by our Western education. So how can we arrive at certainty? We have to communicate with Allah Ta'ala. Our hearts can communicate with Allah Ta'ala. And some of the keys is shukr. We have to have gratitude for all of the great gifts of God. We have to have sabr on the adverse circumstances that we face. And for the problems of the past which have been created by our neglect of Allah Ta'ala in the past, we have istighfar. And for the problems of the future, Allah Ta'ala has given us du'as to seek protection. And in all situations, we must cling to the deen of Allah. And we must seek help and support from Allah. We must seek guidance from Allah. If we seek guidance from other sources, we will go astray. So how can we purify our heart and how can we build a close relationship with Allah Ta'ala? There are three stages of progress which have been mentioned, and these have been refined into 30 or more by the Sufia. And I have written a brief description of some crude basics in how our thinking about economics changes when we think about spiritual growth as the goal of an economic system. So in one of the things that we need to do is to make Salatul Hajat, not just for ourselves, but for the Ummah. And in the Salatul Hajat, after building the ground, Allah Ta'ala asked us to ask Him for three things. One is forgiveness of our sins, and we must understand that sin is basically neglect of God, ghafla, or distraction. And to remove our sorrows, and all our sorrows come from our distance from Allah. And Allah Ta'ala asks us to ask for fulfillment of our needs. And basically our main need is ma'arifat and muhabbat. We need to know Allah and we need to recognize and love Allah and be grateful to Him for giving us this opportunity of ma'arifah and giving us the hearts which can achieve this state. So those are some outlines, because all of us as Muslims know the details, and just this is just a reminder. Inna hazihi tazkirah. And so we go on to step two, the tahafatul falasfa. And basically, because of our extreme respect for West, we have accepted very absurd and ridiculous philosophies and taken them for our guides. And this comes from a deep analysis of the Christian civilization. And basically, they have made a trinity of foundational errors in building up their stock of knowledge. So these errors are embedded at the heart of the knowledge. This is why the whole stock of knowledge needs to be rebuilt. One is that they have created the axiomatic method. And this says that some parts of our knowledge are protected. They are not open to questions because they are axioms. So some of the central axioms which the West takes for granted, that these are to be taken without any discussion or question, these are wrong. And basically this ideology, this methodology of for creating knowledge came from the early Christian experience with the Trinity. They were forced to defend this absurd philosophy that 1 equals 3, and there was no way of doing it. So what they did was they put this out of the bounds of discussion. They said, okay, this is one of the axioms. We take this for granted. This is not subject to discussion. We will build upon this. So exactly like this, everything which is built on false foundations will eventually collapse. Second thing which happened early in Christianity was that at the Council of Nicaea, lies were used to defend truth. Books which were false were incorporated into the Bible because they supported the Trinity, and books which were true were discarded. And this was done deliberately and knowingly in order to create unity of the church and in order to rule out as heresies the Arian heresy and many others, which would have split up the church. So unity was achieved, but at the process of suppressing the truth. And this also led to the third problem, that the West operates with a dual structure of knowledge. The elites have access to some special secret truths which the masses are not allowed to know. So I'm going to illustrate this with my own field in economics. We have an axiomatic approach to human behavior which every student of economics all over the globe studies. And according to this axiom, one of the axioms which we all take for granted without question or discussion is that the goal of life for all human beings is to maximize our pleasure obtained from consumption of goods and services. This is completely absurd and ridiculous. It's neither true normatively, it's not something we should do, nor is it true realistically. Human beings do not do this.
So,
what is a... Excuse me? Please. So this completely absurd philosophy is the foundation of modern economics, which means that all of modern economics is...
Interruption.
Let me see, I think I'm made the... I don't know how to mute everybody else, but I think that people are now muted. All right, so is it not shocking that the West says that the purpose of life is to maximize pleasure? After all, if you reject God, what other option do you have? But what is shocking is that Muslim economists are teaching this poisonous philosophy all over the world, in the Islamic world. This is the problem, that our respect for the West is so huge that we cannot reject obvious absurdities. This lack of self-confidence, this lack of faith in Allah, lack of faith in our book, this is the problem that the Ummah is facing. And this is what the economics is actually what is mentioned in the Quran, that this is the religion of the worship of the nafs. Whatever the nafs says, you should do. That is exactly what economics teaches. And unfortunately, Muslims have not had the confidence to reject it. So what is called today Islamic economics is just an imitation of Western economics with the attachment of minor modifications. So another illustration of my thesis is statistics. This whole discipline was created to provide support for racist ideas. All of the founders were racists and they were eugenicists. They were trying to purify the races, and all of statistics was all about how heredity works and how the superior races transmit their superiority to their inheritance. And this proceeded from a false axiom again, which is still being basis of modern statistics, that all of the data follow an imaginary theoretical distribution which exists only in our imagination. By changing this imaginary distribution, we can get any kind of inference from any kind of data. This also applies to econometrics. But as a student, when I was trained, I was told that these inferences come from the data. So I got the misconception, which is widespread, that the data is telling us this and the data is telling us that. Whereas in fact, it was not the data, but it was the axioms, the assumptions that we had made prior to the data analysis, which were telling us these things. And that didn't become clear to me until much later. So what I'm saying, which is very technical, is in simple and plain terms, is that all of this statistics is a deception. It creates the illusion that the numbers are telling us the truth, and the numbers don't lie, whereas in fact, it's all built on a lie. The social sciences, the whole structure of social sciences is fallacious and flawed. If you think about it, what is social science? It is the study of human society. But then if you say I'm going to study human society, you have to say which society? Are you going to study the Incas, the Mayas, the African societies, Asian societies, European societies? Well, the word science says that no, it's universal, it's all societies. But actually, when you look carefully, you see that it's all about European societies. And this comes again from the racism. They think that the European society is the model for all societies, which every society must follow. And this is absurd. So every society is different, and every society will have a different social science. And so the idea of social science itself is an absurd universal claim. In a paper called Origins of Western Social Sciences, I have explained how actually social sciences originated in the West after the rejection of Christianity, and in an attempt to answer the fundamental questions of how the universe was created, what is the purpose of our lives, how we should behave towards each other, how should we build a good society. So social science gives answers to this based on the European experience. And exactly these questions are answered by our religion, and in particular the Fuqaha have spent their time discussing these issues about ethics and behavior and society. And so basically our fiqh is a replacement for the social science. But it is very important to understand, and this is a problem on which many people are stuck, that if we say that okay, we take the fiqh is a methodology. It tells us how we can use the Quran and Sunnah to solve our problems. It does not give us the solutions. The mistake that is being made is that we take the solutions that were discovered by our elders for a different problem, for a different time, for a different place, and we take those solutions and we fit them to our problems, instead of doing the effort required to solve our current problems using the mindset and methodology of Islam. So the third problem that we face is exactly this. I am making the claim, and as Muslims we are all making the claim, that the Quran provides us with the best solutions to modern problems. And these are better than the best available modern solutions. But we don't have a proof of this. I would like to be very clear. This is just a claim, an empty claim without a proof. So the construction of the proof is what I am calling the Ghazali project. It is something that we need to do actively. And the driver of the Ghazali project is not a solution I have in hand. It is faith in Allah, that Allah Ta'ala, if we think using our deen and our intellectual sources, Allah Ta'ala will guide us to the solutions. It is not that we have a ready-made solution in our hands and we just need to close our eyes and take an ayah of the Quran and it will give us the solution to our modern problem. That is not what I am saying. But I am saying that what Allah Ta'ala's Prophet told us, that I have left you with two things, and if we follow them, we will never go astray. And that is the Book of God and the Sunnah of His Prophet. So we have to look at the Book of God and the Sunnah of our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and use these to solve our modern problems. But this will require a great effort. There is no ready-made solutions to be found. So now there is a deep problem in the Ummah today, that people have tried the correct method, but made huge mistakes in doing so, and because of this, the correct method has itself become tarnished and disreputable. So I'll give just one example of this. The revival of religious science calls for ijtihad, for creative application of Quran and Sunnah to the solution of modern problems. But the first people to raise this call was not me, but it was the secular modern Muslims. And what they did was they said that we must use ijtihad to modify Islam to fit Western intellectual models. And this is obviously the wrong thing to do. In response to this, ulama adopted a rigid stance on religion. They said that we will not allow this kind of ijtihad, and we will protect the traditional understanding of Islam, and that was quite right. So this led to three positions which we can summarize in sort of metaphorical terms as Dioband, sticking very strongly to the tradition, Nadwatul Ulum, which said that we will stick very strongly to the fundamentals, the usul, but we will allow for wide flexibility in the furu, the branches we will modify according to what is necessary for the times. And then Aligarh, which said that we will follow the modern methodology and without regards to religion. This is a caricature of all three, but provides an explanation of the point that I'm trying to make. So basically, the correct position is the middle one, that we need to make ijtihad, but we don't need to throw away the usul. But because the people who called for ijtihad were ready to throw away the usul, the traditionalists denied the possibility, so they denied even legitimate ijtihad, and so the truth became lost, because the people who started the journey took the wrong directions. Similarly, the Islamization of knowledge, what I am calling for, is actually very close and very similar to the idea of Islamization of knowledge, that we need to take Western knowledge and Islamize it. But this is a different, my attitude is different basically, because the problem is Western knowledge. The problem is not, it's all toxic. And so we need to develop an alternative to Western knowledge. And that means we can't go and modify, basically the Islamization of knowledge as represented in Islamic University, this was a problem that was the OIC resolved. It said that yes, we are behind, we need Western knowledge, so let's create universities and teach both traditional Islamic ulum and Western sciences. So if by Islamization of knowledge we mean that I'm going to merge Western knowledge and Eastern knowledge, this cannot be done, and this is what was done. This is what was attempted, because these two are bodies of knowledge are like fire and ice, or fire and water. They cannot be combined. And this is why this attempt has failed. You cannot take Western knowledge and add on to it. You cannot merge these two bodies of knowledge and smooth out the conflicts, because they are built on different foundations. So basically, the problem facing us today, I'm trying to wrap up, is that there is an intellectual battlefield. Today we have been defeated by the West on the intellectual battleground. And today we need to construct our own weapons built on our own intellectual tradition to defeat Western philosophers on their own grounds. And this can easily be done once we understand how Western philosophy is built on deeply flawed foundations. It represents epistemic arrogance. Western philosophy is built on the desire to arrive at universal truths, truths which go beyond the range of the human experience. And Islam teaches us that this is impossible, that we have been given a very limited amount of knowledge. So Islam teaches us epistemic humility, which is something which Western philosophers do not accept. So we say that all human knowledge is built on our own personal experience, and our personal experience is limited to our local situation and condition, and very limited, and we cannot go outside these bounds except by the favor and mercy of Allah Ta'ala. And this is a limitation which West does not accept. In fact, in the West, this kind of subjective experience is not considered knowledge at all. And that's the fundamental problem. So, on the basis of this, one of the first tasks that we need to do is to create an alternative to Western social science, because I think that's the biggest source of our problems today. And for that, I have proposed the creation of Ulumul Umran, based directly on the teachings of Ibn Khaldun, but generalized to modern times. And so we start with the point of view that all of the creation is family of God, and Allah Ta'ala loves best those who serve His family. We need to build human society on the basis of cooperation, generosity, social responsibility. And this is opposed to the Darwinian principles of competition, selfishness, greed, individualism and hedonism. And this is the basis of economics and the basis of most Western social sciences. I have already discussed the Islamic statistics. There's also Islamic psychology, which is built on a model for human souls, which is very different from the Western models. They have ego, id, and superego, but we have aql, qalb, ruh, and nafs. And these lead to a very complex and sophisticated model, which has been actually used by Muslim clinical psychologists, and they have said that this leads to excellent results in terms of understanding human beings, much better than models given by Western intellect. So now I will make some concluding remarks that we have a massive amount of work in front of us. Please mute yourself. Somebody has become unmuted. Hello. So we have to rebuild all of the social sciences. The physical sciences have a lot of technical knowledge, but even that is causing harm to mankind because of the niyyah with which it was created and acquired. The niyyah is to make personal profits for corporations, and today the physical sciences are being used to destroy the world to make profits for corporations, and that's why we are facing an environment crisis. Instead, we need to build the physical sciences on the desire to and intention to feed, house and clothe and educate and provide for health of billions of hungry and homeless people today. We have to stop wars against the people, the animals and the planet. This is the basis of Western social science, that competition and survival of the fittest, life is a jungle. Instead of that, we have to rebuild the ulum on the premise that we can live in harmony with each other, and the message of God is central to this process, and we need to rebuild all of human knowledge on the basis of the message of the Quran. And so we end with a dua that Allah Ta'ala take us out from zulamat and give us the nur and favor us with your mercy and unfold for us the treasure of your knowledge, Ya Arhamar Rahimeen. And I have given some links to some of the talks which provide more details about some of the ideas only mentioned very briefly in this talk. And there is a sequence of 10 lectures on how to launch an Islamic revival. And there is a description of how we can build an Ulumul Umran. This talk, the Ghazali project, is discussed in greater detail in one of these links.